Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Today's podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting.com. And you know, if you aren't using a web conferencing tool, or the service you use is clunky, use my first choice, GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is really easy to use. It turns a call in an instant to an online meeting just with one click. It's affordable, as many meetings as you want for just $49 per month. Very secure, and it substantially reduces meeting-related expenses. You can try GoToMeeting for free for 30 days. If you go to simply the address of gotomeeting.com/podcast, you get 30 free days of unlimited service, and you also get the opportunity to check it out. I highly recommend that we use it for our meetings and our online virtual meetings. Simply go to gotomeeting.com/podcast and go get your 30-day free trial. Hey, it's Andrew Horowitz. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is the post episode 150 where we have the great questions. Episode number 151 for the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So happy that you could join me. Lots to talk about today. Lots to go over. I have a... I think we're going to have a little fun today. We have a grudge match that is brewing here by two fellows who have been at each other's throats, absolutely clawing and banging each other down over the last couple of weeks, ever since we had one of them on the show. And that was Tim Sykes. And I'm going to read some things that they've been writing back and forth. I thought it would be only fair to bring them both back to state their own opinions and to really air out any differences that they may have, because they do have a lot of them. Tim Sykes and Jim Vermeerten, who he had some comments about and some discussion about some of his recent stock picks and his writings on The Motley Fool. Before we get to that, I thought we would talk about some of the things that have happened over the last week. We saw a lot of mixed economic numbers, some very concerning issues out of Europe. We've seen some good news on the retail sales front, and we've seen markets kind of moving around in no direction, a little bit up, a little bit down, kind of right in the middle. But let's talk about some of that, and then I want to read you some of the things that both these fellows have been saying to each other about each other to get you warmed up for the fight, kind of the battle. I guess it's kind of like the battle of the penny stock discussion. So it's going to be probably silly as all can be. I've given them both the ground rules, and I've told them what they can do and what they can't do. Keep it kind of neat, no hitting below the belt, and make sure that we try to stick with the facts. And I will referee, and at any given time I say stop, it's all over. So, you know, well, I think it'll be kind of interesting. And why do I do this? I think it's important to understand there's many sides to any discussion. You know, when you talk about the when we talk about what Tim had been talking about, what Jim Vermeerten writing about, a few of these penny stocks, and when we look at the actual results of it, and then on the other hand, you know, why is Tim talking about it? So we'll get into a lot of that. But a couple things. Last show, wow, did I get some great emails from you. Absolutely just tremendous. Thank you so much. A lot of people had the idea that maybe we could add that to the end of each show, have a question on each of the podcasts that we do that has a maybe one question that you've asked, and we could answer it. I really got a lot of emails in from a lot of people saying how great and how much they enjoyed the show, not only the people that actually sent in the questions. And, of course, for all the people that did send in questions and that did participate, we're going to give you a copy of my book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. For those of you that did not get it, run right over to Amazon and pick it up. I think you'll be very happy that you did. Now, let's see where we want to start here. Okay, I'm begging for followers on Twitter. We put all the information that we talk about on the Disciplined Investor blog. All of it instantaneously comes across Twitter whenever it's posted. The people that are getting on, that are on Twitter, that follow us here, get the first alert that the podcast has been posted. And if you want to help me out, if you haven't even thought about doing Twitter before, just set up an account anyway. Go over and follow Andrew Horowitz. Twitter.com/AndrewHorowitz. I'll take it as a personal favor. Got a couple of those coming up, some things like that that I want to talk to you about. I also want to mention that if you have any questions on you know, little items related to the stock market, like how many stocks should I own in a portfolio, or you know, what's a PE ratio, go check out The Winning Investor. That's a podcast that I do with the Quick and Dirty Gang. They're not really quick or dirty, but Quick and Dirty Tips Gang, I guess it is. All right, so what's going on? Let's talk about this. Well, let's see. When it comes to the markets, let's for a moment stretch out a little bit and let's talk about Greece, because it's something that really is agitating. This whole Greece idea of going on this massive austerity program and doing what they can to bring in their budget deficit and to lower their debt is just outstanding. How can we argue with something like that? But at the same time, why are they doing it? Well, they're doing it so that they get the nod of approval from the EU. The EU goes and backs their bonds. And at the same time, they issue somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 to $10 billion worth of bonds over the next period of time, which was, by the way, oversubscribed. Right now, there's a lot more interest in that because they believe that they're not going to fail. They're being sold at a higher interest rate than is seen in the markets, whether it's German bunds or whether it is U.S. treasuries or for Japanese treasuries. Whatever it may be, they're getting a much higher rate because there's a lot more risk. But the risk is really being seen as non-existent. And why is that? It's being seen as non-existent because what we're finding is that, or at least what the perception is that Germany is going to back everything that goes on there. And essentially, that's not the truth. That's the theory. But Merkel from Germany said just a couple of days ago that there is no way that they're going into this program and saying that we are, you know, uniformly going to back Greece. We will be there to talk to you about things. But what has happened is kind of like what happened when there was this backing by the U.S. when they said they were going to do things. They didn't really have to do things. They said they were going to do things. And miraculously, what happened was that all of a sudden, everything was backed and everything seemed to be solid. Nobody worried any longer because the government said that they had some kind of a backing, or at least the perception that they were there. The same thing is happening in Greece and in Europe. The problem is this, as I see it, Greece is going to say whatever they have to say in order to issue the bonds at the lowest rate of interest and the lowest cost factors to them. In doing so, they'll go on an austerity plan that they're seeing just, I mean, if you haven't looked, take a look at the amount of strikes that are going on, the work stoppage that's going on, and the level of taxation and the level of budget and service cuts that are going on. It is extraordinary. Why all of a sudden are they doing this? Why didn't they do this over the last few years? Because they're reckless, folks. They're absolutely reckless over there. So are the countries like Spain and parts of, and someone, I guess we could say, of Italy and Portugal. They are reckless. They do not care until it's too late. And the truth of the matter is, just like Das was saying a couple of weeks ago when he was on the show, that in the end, the bottom line is they'll say and do whatever they have to do to make things look like it's good. So what do we do from here as investors? Well, we have to keep a very cautious eye on much of this because it isn't a place that you want to just throw your money right now unless there is a absolute backing by, let's say, Germany, by the EU. There is somewhat of that, but the question then remains, if this keeps going on and we see something like Spain, who is teed up to be next, do we want to be in the euro? I have some question there. Do we want to be investing in euro-based investments? I'd much rather be invested somehow in dollar right now. When we see that the UK is having just massive, massive debt problems and deficit problems that are eclipsing an all-time high, do you want to be in the pound? Well, obviously not. The pound has been trashed. So all these people that said, like a Peter Schiff who said, the dollar is going to go down to zero. Well, right now, there's a lot of currencies that are in front of the line, a lot more of them, and they are creating a more valuable dollar. That's what they're doing. They're creating a much more valuable dollar. So we would rather be in, let's say, some of the investments that will benefit from that. Now, at the same time, you have to be careful because we're seeing the dollar move up generally in value, or at least stabilize, and oil is going up, commodities are going up. How is that all possible? It's kind of a conundrum there. So we like some of the areas that are in the expansionary phase, in the inventory restocking cycle stage. We like things like steel and coal. We like some of the companies in healthcare, you know, a little bit less, more of the technology, the Googles, those are good. And I got to tell you something, they're paying off nicely. Right now we're seeing, for example, a lot of takeover talk. This week we had two companies that had takeover talk, some earnings discussion, some upgrades. For example, AK Steel. AK Steel just blew it out when we saw a combination of the auto companies doing better. We saw those great reports. They were good for most companies. Toyota, not so good. But Ford did better, as did many of the other domestic companies, compared to a year ago and compared to where they thought they were going to be. You got to kind of put that in perspective. You know, compared to a year ago, well, of course they're looking better. The second thing is that they saw a possibility of U.S. Steel, or symbol X, and AK Steel is AKS, is possibly going to be a suitor for them. Now, what did we find? We found a volume spike. We found the stock moving higher. We saw options action, dramatic options action on the calls, the $25 calls for March, which is a very short period of time. And that means that somebody's thinking there's going to be a pretty quick something going on with this. And it's really been driving the stock up very nicely. We'll see if that really comes to pass, but questionable at best, possible, maybe. Same thing's happening with Patriot Coal. Take a look at this. We look at Patriot Coal, PCX, which has risen dramatically. This is the second or third time we've entered it and exited this position. We like the position. We think it's a great play. We like Console Energy as well. There's a few others. But when it comes to providing electricity, it's a great play right now. Now, even though Patriot Coal has seen a lot of volatility, they are a buyout candidate. They would make a great play for either a Massey or some other major company coming in looking for an expansion of their current business. And then to finalize this discussion, we have companies like Joy Global, and we have companies like Bucyrus, B-U-C-Y, which is the companies that are the mining for this. Now, we're not going to stay in these forever because they're going to see a lot of movement up and down when it comes to the market movement and the dollar movement and how the markets play out. But generally speaking, these are the plays you want to be in a economic cycle where you are in a recovery phase, whether or not we see a double dip, and whether we see over the long term, we see that the inventory restocking cycle is playing out, and that is occurring. We saw that in the Fed Beige book this week, as a matter of fact. Now, let's switch over to retail sales, and then we're going to talk about some important technical points on the S&P 500 that I think we need to be really, really in focus of. Now, most people think, and it's pretty widely thought of, that the consumer is dead. Now, we saw some pretty rough employment numbers, however you want to slice it. We saw some productivity numbers that were through the roof, which really goes right to, if you read or heard me talk about the whole idea of consumption cannibalism, this is the idea that machines, kind of like the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rise of the Machines, think about this, that they took over everything. Machinery technology is taking over a good amount of really the working need of or the working abilities of a human being. I've talked about this example so many times, the whole idea that Alcoa is replacing probably about 60 to 70% of their total employment staffing and the requirements they have for employment, and they're replacing them with all sorts of machinery and technology and automation. And that is leading us to a problem, because we talked about that, really, not that I'm aware of, machines don't eat, they don't sleep, they don't need any kind of cuddling, they don't need any kind of vacations, yet, okay? But what's happening now is we are in a real interesting point and really an inflection point, it would seem, right now, where we have to figure out, what does this jobless recovery mean? We saw the initial claims ticking up. We see the jobless rate ticking up, or just, you know, generally ticking up or stabilizing. And then kind of still the numbers are pretty horrendous when it comes to the fact that very little employment is happening overall. And when we look at that, at the same time, we see this auto report that we saw was pretty impressive. But more impressive than that, much more impressive, was the retail sales number. Now, the retail sales number, again, put this in perspective. You have to not sugarcoat any of this. It was from a period that was considered a very low base. In other words, we're talking about a year over year, right? Month over month, year over year. And when we look at last year in 2009, February, things fell off a cliff, literally. I mean, things were falling off a cliff. The economy was a question whether it was open or closed at that point, if you remember. But even so, the numbers that were anticipated, which were low, were beaten very nicely by many of the retailers, in particular companies like Abercrombie & Fitch beat very nicely, Urban Outfitters beat, Aéropostale, we own that one, and the stocks have done really very nicely. If you look at some of these stocks and you look at where they were to where they are, you would be, I think, rather impressed. We've been impressed because we've stayed away from a lot of these for some time, trading in and out of them, buying some of them for a while, playing them out if they work with us. But we do own Aéropostale, and we're making a nice profit on that. But at the same time, you have to wonder if this is this inventory restocking cycle and people are feeling better, or at least they are buying a little bit, and we're finding the comparisons to very low points and low comparison points. You know, how long does this last with that? Does it last forever? Do they keep on building? Well, right now what I could tell you is that most of these companies have become experts when it comes to cost cutting, when it comes to penny pinching, when it comes to supply management. We're going to have to see over the next few quarters. That's why we have always predicted that the second half of this year is where the problems could come in when and if they do come in. Whether or not they come in is still a little bit questionable, but that's when all this will start hitting. The next thing we need to look at very quickly is the whole idea that we've been watching and waiting and getting close to surpassing and then holding and then moving back. And this has been going on for a while now. This 1125 mark on the S&P 500, there's some real importance there. And I guess there's a couple of schools of thought on this, that this is a Fibonacci retracement number that's very important. We've put this on our Monday morning indicators we are watching. If you do not have the Twitter at Andrew Horowitz, you may not be getting this update. You may not know to get there. So that's why you want to make sure to go to at Andrew Horowitz and make sure to get that. So if nothing else, you get our Monday update, which is very early in the morning on Mondays. And it's all about the indicators we're watching, about 18 to 20 different indicators that we're looking at. One of the ones that we look at is the S&P 500, the Fibonacci retracement levels, and about 1125 or so is that number. And it has to hold over there with reasonable volume, in my opinion. But let's look at this number and what the significance is. We passed over that once before, and that's very nice, and we came back dramatically. And some schools of thought say that once you pass through that, no longer is that a resistance point. But as we see the markets, how they've been trending lately, that is a general magnetic point for the markets. We've been predicting that the markets would get about there, somewhere around there, and then start to possibly sell off in between earnings periods and into a period that there's still a lot of uncertainty when it comes to whether the government's going to do anything with financial regulations and whether or not they're going to do anything and what it's going to be for healthcare. And might I put on the brakes for a moment and just tell you about my disgust for the Volcker plan, the Volcker rule. I mean, you always know that there's a problem when banks will snap back right after an announcement of a financial regulatory reform bill. Doesn't that make you think for a second? Where's the benefit of this financial regulatory bill, and what are they actually regulating? If banks are not going to be a little bit soft into it, yeah, sure, you could talk about buying the rumor, selling the news, or selling the rumor, buying the news, however you want to look at it. But I got to tell you something, it doesn't look like there's any teeth in this again. And while we're supposed to be going back to a Sarbanes-Oxley style of banking where we're separating all this, you see Goldman, you see Citi, you see JP, all doing very nicely once this rule starts being announced. That is not what you want to see. The same thing happened with healthcare companies. Almost as soon as they said, hey, we're going to really make sure the healthcare companies and health insurance companies don't rip you off. And here's the legislation that we're looking at. The healthcare companies went flying. You know, the Humanas, the Aetnas, and Cigna, and all these other companies that were out there that deal in this WellPoint, this whole HMO / insurance area. I mean, it's kind of a little bit disheartening to think about that in the way that it is. But nonetheless, getting back, I stray. I do apologize. So much to talk about. But this 1125 or so, right about there, is not showing up in any volume. Have you looked at the volume lately? Often you want to track the volume. We talk about this a lot because the volume is the tell. It's the tell which shows us who's buying, who's not, are institutions involved, are they buying on the up days, are they buying on the down days, what's the volume pressure, etc. It's very, very suspect when you don't see the volume. That doesn't mean you can't see things moving higher and higher. But I'll tell you something, when they knock them down, it's going to come with ferocity. It's going to be ferocious. Roar. Seriously, it's going to be very, very difficult because what happens is when they line up, they don't just take out 1 or 2 or 3 days. They take out a week or 2 weeks worth of returns because the volume is pressuring those stocks so much more in such a higher level. So just things to consider right now. We'll post a lot of this in our direction information. These are things that we talk about. We actually have a private website for our clients as well, which doesn't have Twitter, that we update our clients on a regular basis. That's kind of a private situation, only the clients of the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. For those people who want to check it out, of course, is a $50,000 minimum, and all you have to do is go to the 15-minute virtual tour and check it out. But I thought we'd do is we put on our boxing gloves, we'd get ready, we'd talk to the fellows who are going to, go head-to-head and get them on the line and see what they have to say and bring them on for a quick edition of Boxing with Andrew, a all-out, bout between Jim Vermeerten and Tim Sykes to find out which of these has something to say that may sway us or educate us more appropriately in the direction of what's the most important thing to look at when we're looking at penny stocks, how to research them, etc. So, with that in mind, let's. If you have kids and small children and small animals, I think it's probably a good idea to move them aside at this point, because I know both these guys are pretty PO'd at each other. So it should be a lot of fun, if nothing else, entertaining. So when we get back, we're just going to kind of hook up, and we'll bring them both on. We'll talk to them. Thanks for joining me. Hang on a second for more of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Okay, we are back here, and I wanted to just bring up a couple things before we bring them on, and just tell you that they've both written some very scathing articles about the other. Jim Vermeerten has written Tim Sykes Exposed, The Myth, The Mouth, and The Fool. And on the other hand, Tim has written a very to-the-point article called Is Jim Vermeerten the Dumbest Person in All of Finances? And they are calling each other names, but again, we have some rules, and I just want to mention something here that these guys have really put some very significant personal and professional attacks on each other. We'll put the links on these articles, and we'll try to get this all squared away with this podcast, but basically we'll put the links to the articles in the show notes. Everything about this discussion is in the show notes, so make sure to go on over there and check it out. And now we're going to do something that we've should have done a little while ago. We're going to have a couple of gentlemen on that have some discussion with each other. I've heard from them both that they were slightly unhappy with some of the issues that went on. Tim Sykes came on the show not too long ago and talked about some stocks that Jim Vermeerten had been recommending and kind of called him out a bit. Jim called me up. He's a friend of mine. We were on the MSN Money Strategy Lab together, and Jim is a blogger, and he wanted to say that, what was going on with that. There were some inaccuracies, and I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I thought we'd spend just a little bit of time trying to clear the air. Now, Tim, you're with us?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, Jim, you're with us. We got Tim and Jim. Okay, so I will try to enunciate the J's.
Just call me Sykes.
Psycho Sykes. I got you. Okay, Sykes. Tim Sykes. And Jim Vermeerten, thanks for both coming on. I laid down the rules prior to the show, so hopefully we're going to have a nice discussion here, or at least a discussion that will cover these topics. I thought that what we'd do first is give Jim a couple of seconds just to flush out some of the issues that he had, only due to the fact that we had a very long show with Tim Sykes. So just for a second, Jim, I know you had some things that you wanted to talk about, and then what we're going to do is allow, both of you to go and talk about it, and I'll kind of act as a referee, not that I'm trying to create a fighting or a adversarial situation here. But Jim, tell me what it was that really, you felt it was unfair.
Well, the part that I thought was unfair was when Tim accused me of taking money from various promoters and making profits on these. I blog, I was the amateur in the strategy lab. I get paid nothing from anybody. I'm not on anybody's payroll. I have my own. I'm retired. I make money off my own investments. which I make sure never conflicts with anything that I write about. When I wrote my articles, I was very clear that in both cases, these were companies that there was nobody following. They were on my list for price action only.
Okay, so what stocks were those? Remind me.
Clearright and National. Let's see what that was. It was Clearright and Nutritional Holdings.
Okay, Nutritional Holdings. Okay. Let me ask you something. Are these the kind of stocks that usually will hit your screens?
They'll hit my screens only because what I do every morning is I go ahead and I screen for the same thing. I want to see the list of stocks that have had the most frequent price appreciations in the last 20 days. So I want to look at a stock, and I don't want to see a stock that jumped. You know, a lot of people go to the price advance list to see which stock kicked up the most. What I want to find is a stock that has, in the last month, last 20 trading sessions, has had the most frequent price increases. You know, so I'm looking for something that has increased in at least 10 out of the last 20 days.
Okay. I hear you. So,
and that's why they came up.
Okay, so, and then you wrote about them. These are thinly traded, thinly covered, and
right.
And these are things that you mentioned here, and there was some coincidences on timing with promoters, I guess, and that's what at least Tim said. So, Tim, what is the objection here? Tim Sykes. Tim Sykes. Yeah, Tim Sykes.
Hermia Sykes. Hi. So it's NXT Nutritionals. It's not called Nutritionals. You know, you say that it's based on price action, but when both of these articles came out, one came out on the Motley Fool, one came out on Seeking Alpha. Both articles started off by saying the exact same format, saying I don't normally pick speculative plays, but this came up on my radar screen. And you go on to quote the, you know, Yahoo Finance summary of each company in both articles, and then right after the Yahoo Finance summary, you also say bar chart listed as a buy, you know, technical indicators. My problem is that when both articles were written, one stock was up, CLRH was up 17 trading days in a row, NXTH was up 20 trading days in a row. And that, you know, that goes along with you saying, okay, I look for price stands where they're up 20 days in a row. But what kind of messed up screen picks stocks that are up 20 days in a row? I mean, those are stocks that if I was a technical screener, I would pick them to short. Second of all, that's, you know, that could just be a coincidence. Maybe you are right with the price volume. But what the problem, the bigger problem, is that CLRH and NXTH both have the same CFO, okay? They are both promoted by the same group of people. They both have the same exact investor relations firm, and that investor relations firm has a nasty history, as the StreetSweep.org has covered. And the promoters are using Jim Van Meeren's articles in their promotional mailers for these stocks. And I don't know, and you know, I don't mean to accuse Jim Van Meeren of taking any money. I don't know, you know, even if he says that he's not, I don't know if I'm going to believe him. You know, I mean, it's like listening to Bill Clinton or like OJ or something. You know, I'm not trying to make any accusations. What I'm saying is that these stocks are both promoted by the same people. It's the same exact people involved in them. And when Jim wrote about them, both of them, within 2 days of his article, collapsed 50% intraday, leaving anybody who bought based on Jim Van Meeren's articles just crushed, and there's no opportunity to get out of these things because they collapse 50% all within a few minutes. So stop losses are completely irrelevant.
Okay.
So either Jim is somehow connected, or he's the unluckiest guy, or his research just stinks. Either
way, it is very, very scary. Okay, so Jim, would you
yes.
agree that obviously these were, you said it, I think, that these were speculative plays that you don't usually play. That's what you said. I think you said
yes.
that, right? Okay, and would you also... did you know that there was the same that there was the same CEO? Did you do any fundamental analysis?
CFO. I did. I only looked on what reports were on Yahoo Finance. I used Yahoo Finance, and I looked to see if there was any analyst recommendations on it or any news articles. And all I could find were news articles about the products the companies themselves sold. I pointed out that the one Clearlight has not even had any sales. They have a product out there that isn't popular mechanics. Other places, they try to sell it. but they've had no sales. The other company, and again, there's a difference, and I hope Tim will go into this because he seems to be an expert on it. There's a big difference between the underlying fundamentals of a company and whether the company itself is a going company, a going concern, and the manipulation that may happen with the stock. In the case of Nutritional Holdings, I've continued to watch that stock and saw that they keep continually getting brand new contracts with new grocery stores to put in their product. So I've seen their sales climbing. Now, the stock prices and the actual underlying company that's running seem to have no correlation to each other. You know,
quick question. Sorry to jump in. When you say NXT sales are rising, they have not reported a quarterly report in 4 months, and in that last quarterly report, sales dropped 60%. Yes, they have had press releases since, but as the streetsweeper.org, who is, you know, I'm going to quote them a lot because they have an investigative reporter, a former fraud is on their team who investigates this. NXT is actually paying slotting fees to get their product in stores, and that's how they're allowing these press releases. We have not seen any SEC filing of any increased sales, and I actually wrote a whole post because they gave Shaquille O'Neal 3 million shares, and they've been using his image, and in the promotional mailer which they sent out, in the promotional mailer, they've actually sent out two promotional mailers. One was $300,000, one was $500,000, and this is a company with very little cash, no sales, and they're spending, some investor is spending $800,000 on promotional mailers quoting Shaquille O'Neal and you. You're actually using your article in that saying Jim Van Meeren of the Motley Fool has been recommending NXTH. So when you say these press releases are saying you're seeing increased sales, you haven't seen any increased sales. Press releases for penny stocks, and yes, I am an expert, are completely ridiculous, and they're not, you know, they don't matter. What matters is the SEC filings, and there is nothing in the SEC filings because they haven't filed in 4 months.
Now, Let me jump in here. You know, that's an interesting point that you make there, and I'd like my listeners to understand something, because there's something that is just kind of beneath the surface here that I want to bring out. You know, in the game of investing, one of the problems you have is understanding and believing what's going on. You know, a CEO could say, okay, you know, sales are good, we see some opportunity here, and we see that we're moving into China, we see that next quarter is going to look good. Whether you believe them or not is, you know, a different story. As a matter of fact, there's some major hedge firms that have brought in CIA experts to work for them to find out if, in fact, there is a CEO, if they're lying. But more so to the point of what Tim is talking about here for a moment is that the news that's out there essentially can be just manipulated, doctored, and brought to fore in any manner. Just you have to pay for the press release, and there's really no oversight in that. And when it comes to looking at a company, you know, it's important to understand what's really going on there. So, you know, whether or not there is a release. So, for example, if I wrote something up in a company, you know, about, I don't know, company ABC that was negative or positive, and the company all of a sudden gets a PR group that's working for them, and they decide that they're going to utilize this, they can just pull that material, quote me as an expert, and then, of course, that everybody else sees it, and it becomes a giant snowball. So I think that we all agree. I would think we all agree with that, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes, and not to mention, there's also questions regarding NXT Nutritional CEO. His whole entire background, the streetsweeper.org called up all the companies he claimed to work for. The companies that he claimed to work for never have heard of him. So there's very many questions. It's like we're having an academic debate. It's ridiculous. When you have these promotional mailers where someone is paying six figures and the stock triples two times based off both promotions, and then within days of those promotions, it collapses 50%. You don't talk about the company. What matters is the promotion, and that is what is so scary. Because Jim, you're not involved in it. Let's you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're not involved at all. But your research is so atrocious, and the fact that you would just believe Yahoo Finance, you wouldn't do the slightest bit of Googling, you wouldn't do the slightest bit of SEC filing research, and that is, you know, very dangerous for you to have access to Motley Fool and Seeking Alpha readers when you don't do any research.
Well, on the sales figures, I went on the press releases that their products were now being carried in both Kroger and Hannaford's, and I continued to Google those to find out if there was any denial about those products being carried there, and I did not find the negative news that you're talking about.
Do you look at SEC filings at all, or do you just look at press releases? I mean, if I could invest based on press releases, I mean, I'd be broke within a day.
I do look at the at, at both. But in those, you know, like I said, I put them up as being highly speculative. For those people that follow me, they know that I encourage everybody to do their own due diligence on a stock, that I'm out there just showing people some stocks that are presently moving. And
okay, but let's talk about your due diligence. Forget about other people. So did you look at the SEC filings of NXT Nutritionals or CLRH and realize that they have the same CFO and the same stock promoters and the same people are putting out promotional mailers? Did you look at that stuff at all before you wrote these articles?
No, I did not.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I have a different question because this is something that, first of all, I want to know who has the noise in the background. Does somebody have a TV on or something?
Probably me. I'm sorry. I'm in Los Angeles. I tried to get a better connection, but I failed. I'm too busy.
You failed. Let's go with that. let me ask you a question, seriously, because this is something I want to know. Because I think this is something that you touched on. Hey, Jim, I think that it's, you know, I think there's a point that you made there. I think this is what you said, so I'm just trying to go with this. That, you know, you're not making anything on the article. You're not getting paid by, this is what you said, just confirm this. You're not getting paid by anybody to do the article, right?
I am not being paid by anybody to promote an article. I'm not being paid by anybody to write an article.
Okay, so the goal.
And let's just be very clear on being paid. Are we talking about cash and stock and affiliations? No affiliations whatsoever to anybody who works with CLRH or NXTH or Charles Payne, who is one of the promoters behind it. And Charles Payne has a checkered past. He was fined $400,000 by the SEC.
I have never met anybody from any of those firms. I've never met Charles Payne. Have never talked to them. Have never gotten one dime. They've given me no stock like you claim that they've given Shaq. I get nothing from those.
You're just an incompetent researcher. Okay, so case settled, you're an incompetent researcher, and you picked two stocks that collapsed within 50% within a few hours of your pick.
Well, let me...
Can we agree on that? If you pick a stock and you don't read the SEC filings, and yes, you say it's on price action alone, but you're trading stocks under $5 a share, which anybody who's been in this game long enough knows that this is the danger zone, and, you know, Jim claims to be a successful long-term investor. I mean, anybody who hears the word penny stocks runs and hides because they know about all the skeletons in the SEC filing. So when you write about a company based on price action after 20 days in a row with promotional mailers, with the same CFO, with the same IR firm, and not reading anything fundamental that's important, you know, press releases are just not important at all. I mean, all I can say is that you're an incompetent researcher. That's how it boils down.
Well, you can have your opinion on that. You may call me an incompetent researcher, but the part that I had the big problem with was that you were assuring everybody that I was taking money under the table, that you knew.
I said you're either the unluckiest guy, the dumbest guy, or you're corrupt. I didn't put a label on you. Right now I'm leading towards one of the dumbest guys. You are corrupt.
Hold on for a second, because I like Jim. I mean, Jim, you know, we get along, right? We've had our times together, had a couple of drinks together in the past and all that. He has a nice process with the bar church. I will say something. I want to ask something. I want to ask a different question here. Who vets your material? This is not directed at you per se, Jim. I want to ask this question,
yes,
though. Who vets your material when you put it on Motley Fool? Because I have two questions. Who vets your material? And I'm just curious, just because I know.
On Motley Fool, nobody vets anything. Motley Fool is nothing more than a bulletin board where anybody can put up anything they want.
With any headline, right?
Same as on Tim's site. Tim has a site.
Right, no, right. I agree.
On Tim's site, people can do postings, and he lets them post and say anything they want.
You mean the comments?
As crude as they want.
The comments.
But promoters aren't using my blog post and promotional mailers that lure in the gullible and says that Shaq is going to pump up sales when sales are actually dropping 60%.
But
promoters don't quote me because I'm realistic.
But wait a minute.
I never quoted Shaq or anything.
Okay, hold on a second. That's not my question. My question is this. My question is, you put something up on Motley Fool. Now, my understanding that it was a Motley Fool article, you're like in a Motley, I don't know this answer, but are you a Motley Fool contributor? Is that what that is?
Anybody can be a Motley Fool contributor. All you do is you sign in with a password, and from that point on, you can post anything you want.
And
Motley Fool
and
is a bulletin board, and that's all it is.
When you say it's a bulletin board, so it's a blog that anybody can blog, right? Is that what you're telling me?
Right.
Not? Okay.
Yeah.
So now,
if somebody wants to report a comment you made for being inappropriate, they can click the report this button. But beyond that, Motley Fool and Facebook are probably about the same.
Okay. So now,
but Seeking Alpha is, you know, vetted, apparently, you know,
yes,
allegedly vetted, well, and Seeking Alpha is.
Seeking Alpha is written on two levels, okay? One is a straight bulletin board, and you can click then on any article you put on the bulletin board. You can click on it and then have the editors look at it. If the editors look at it and like it, they then elevate it to an article and put it on their front pages. So you've got a bulletin board of just anybody's article, and then you've got another area where they actually ask other people are reading.
Did the editors like your article on NXT Nutritionals enough where you just basically repeated verbatim the Yahoo Finance profile and what said on bar chart? Did they like it enough to elevate it to an actual article?
They apparently did.
Okay, so now, I have another question about Motley
Fool. So it's not Jim's fault, it's Seeking Alpha's fault.
Okay,
you know,
well,
somebody has to blame, because I'm getting emails from hundreds of people who got lured into these stocks because they're saying, this company is putting out their little sweetener in stores. Why did the stock just drop 50%? And they don't understand that press releases can be manipulated. They don't understand that you have to read SEC filings. And when you have people like Jim Van Meeren writing articles that just rehashes the press releases and rehashes the price action, he's contributing to the promotion, even if he's not involved.
So I have a question for you, Jim. And I have a question
sure.
for you also, Sykes.
By the way, I didn't invest or make money on the stock. Tim, what about you?
What was the question? Did you invest or make money on those stocks?
I said I stayed out of the stock. I didn't invest in it. I've made no money on it. Can Tim make that same claim?
Did you play these stocks?
I wish I could have found shares to short after your article, but I couldn't. There were no shares to short on either time of your article. But the second promotional mail on NXTH.
At the time last that you were on Andrew's site, did you disclose to everybody that you shorted that stock while you were sitting there head-banging me, saying what a bad person I was? Did you bother to tell anybody on that broadcast that you had shorted that stock, and on your website today you brag about how much money you made on that stock by shorting it?
I didn't,
while you're trashing
I didn't short the stock the first time when your articles came out and when the mailers came out.
No,
trust me, if I would have found shares, I would have shorted the heck out of it. The second time, of course, I talk about my gains all the time. I talk about my trades all the time. But
I didn't hear that on that broadcast.
I shorted NXTH after the second promotional mailer for one day. I covered when it collapsed 50% in one day. This was not when I was on Andrew's show. I had no position on Andrew's show. I trash companies all the time for promotional mailers. You think that you even have the slightest bit of a case when there's $800,000 in mailers going out? Are you freaking out of your mind?
Well, wait. I want to ask a question now. So about this. There's another fundamental question that I have. Tim, I know why you blog. I understand why you blog. You blog because you get an audience, your audience buys things from you, that you have a variety of subscriptions, all this good stuff, right? Am I off on anything there?
Correct. No, that's how I make my money.
Okay.
I teach people how to profit legally from the manipulation and promotion of these penny stocks. So when I see manipulation and promotion going on, I write about it. I sometimes trade the stocks, but most of the time I can't even find shares. All I can do is warn people. In Jim Van Meeren's case, when he wrote these two articles, I was too late. They both stocks collapsed 50% before I could even find shares.
I hear you. The reason why I write about it is
because I got so many emails from people who lost a lot of money. And they said to me, I don't understand it. Please teach me. So this is what I'm doing. I'm teaching them how the game works.
I'm trying to gather and bring a lesson on all these different parts to my listeners. And there's a reason why I asked this question. So I asked the question about Motley Fool, so people understand that the unbelievable the titles and what happens to the Motley Fool. We talk about this because I want everybody to understand what happens when it comes to research. I talk about it when it comes, you know, issues when it comes to penny stocks. I mean, it's all about that. Now, here's the question. You are blogging because, and I think, you know, you're pretty obnoxious sometimes. I think you admit that. You know, you talk about training and you put down people, you build them up and all. I mean, you go everywhere and it's your personality, it's your play, and it's working for you. My question, though, is, in a bigger sense, Jim, why are you blogging?
I blog for similar reasons, to help people learn how to use the tools on there. Now, one thing that if he'd read all the articles, I'd like to just quote from an article that I wrote. I put down, if you're an investor or even a day trader, stay away from anything that's under $5 and traded on the over-the-counter. These stocks are not for you. You can they may lose their following, turn illiquid, or have a tremendous price gyration for reasons that are beyond comprehension. These are not investors.
But it is not
they're
beyond
flyers.
Comprehension. There are a lot of, that's my whole
I
point.
I thought we were going
my
to talk one at a time.
My
yeah,
whole
we were.
Point is that it is
agree.
Possible.
We were,
I thought this wasn't going to be the Jerry Springer show.
No, it's hopefully not. Wait, don't throw that chair. No, I'm kidding. Tim, let me Sykes, let him finish.
I put right in there, these are not investments. They're flyers. They're lotto tickets. And, you know, I still believe that. And I hope that people understand that they can do research online. I agree with Tim 100%. There's lots of tools out there. They should do it. You know, I'm just pointing out to people some stocks that look interesting they should look at, but I don't promote penny stocks because I think people can get burnt there,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very risky area, and it's not for investors. It's not even for day traders. It's for people that seem to take a flyer. When I read Tim's blog, and I see the writers that are writing in on there, they're talking about on an entire trade making $200, $300, $400, $600 a piece on there. Okay, you know, the people I want to talk to are those people that are in their 50s, 60s, accumulated some money, and try to show them some ways that they can look at it and stay with the larger stocks. Don't be on the bulletin board. Stay on the exchange traded stocks
mm-hmm.
only.
Okay, so I need to ask this.
Tim has taken two little things out of context.
Okay, I got
you. When I put in two stocks that I normally do not cover and saying, you know, this is my whole career.
Right, no, I understand that. But I have a bigger question. You just said that, I'm asking you as a friend. I'm serious about this.
Yes.
But why are you blogging? I'm not saying you shouldn't blog. That's not what I'm saying. I'm asking you, why are you doing it? You know, if you're not making any money on it, and there's no benefit, and there's only, and you're not trading in the stocks that you have and all that, I mean, why are you doing it? For what purpose?
I do it just for the sheer enjoyment of it. I used to teach college, and I enjoyed teaching graduate school and law school, and now that I'm retired, this is just my method of helping people. I try to, on my articles, show them exactly, step by step, how I came to look at a stock, what I looked at, and always encourage them to do some additional due diligence to see if that particular stock fits in their portfolio.
I hear you. So in closing, because we're not going to drag this out forever, but here's what I think I got out of this. I think that generally that Tim's on a very bad phone, so I think I got that out of it. The second thing is that I think probably, if I could sum this up, Jim and Van Meerten tell me this, probably going to stay away from those little thinly stocks from now on, generally speaking, because the realization is we all learn this kind of stuff, and I'm not suggesting anything more than, again, as a friend, that, you know, I probably wouldn't even deal with those either. Those things are, too much of powder kegs. And it's just not worthwhile, for goodness sakes. I mean, I'm not schooling you here. I'm just saying, in fact, I think, for both of us, you know?
Right.
And the other thing is that the knowledge that we can get out of this is that there is amazing amounts of fraud that go on in this marketplace that can even fool people that have been doing this for a while. But you need to keep yourself very focused on the fact that there is more than just the press releases, the stock tips, the sleight of hand that goes on with any of this. Because if you're taking a stock that can go down 30, 40, 50% in a day that looks like what happened and the rug gets pulled out on you, who knows which side is playing what? And the final thing that I think we learn from all this inclusive everybody on this phone, that we all need to be, and listeners need to be very careful who they're reading, what they're reading, what the purpose of it is, what their background is, and when you're looking at titles, for example, on Motley Fool, is it an article that somebody has either a stake in? Is it something that is going to be working against you? Because somebody want to work the other side? And the fact of the matter is that when you get your information, you have to get it from a solid source, because the truth of the matter is you never know what side of the fence somebody's on. Would we all agree with those points?
We can agree with those points.
Yes, but I'd also like to add one thing where Jim says that he wants to blog to teach others. But my thing is, maybe, Jim, you shouldn't be blogging. Maybe you should teach yourself to read the SEC filings to do some actual digging before you share your opinion with others. And yes, I know you have all the legal disclaimers saying it's only for day traders and you should stay away from this stuff and it's beyond comprehension, but you know, maybe you should learn about how this stuff works before you share it on the Molly Fool or on Seeking Alpha or anywhere publicly, because people will get hurt. And yes, they cannot sue you because, you know, you have all these legal disclaimers and you say it's for entertainment purposes only. But just understand that in these two instances, you know, and I've got my eyes on you, so if you ever write about any of these other kinds of companies again, I'm going to, you know, throw the hammer down again. But just so that you know, I mean, people are getting hurt by this, by your articles. And, you know, you have to live with that. Even if you're not, like, you know, liable, you have to live with that. And it's very scary that you don't even understand that you made a lot of errors and you hurt a lot of people.
You know, to me, it's very scary that you can come on a show and talk and have on your promos about being a successful hedge fund manager when, in fact, you lost 30% and the thing got shut down. You know, the fact,
well, but you see, that's
the fact that you could actually come in and call yourself a financial expert when the only time that it was ever audited and there was a company out there that you were managing that was regulated and people had it, you lost 30%.
Yes,
you don't come up and say that. If I took people's money and lost 30% of their managed money and had the audacity to charge a 30% performance fee, I wouldn't be able to hold my head up.
Jim, they're using five-year-old data, and you have to understand that the reason why I lost it was because I believed in these penny stocks. I was like you. I was uneducated. Now I'm wiser. You're saying that my loss is a bad thing. It made me wiser. Now I can educate you, okay? You should read my book. You forget that I'm number one out of 45,000 traders for the past 2 years, okay? So let's use a little current data. Let's use some research, and let's see if you can read, because if you can read, then you can learn. And if you can learn, you won't make such dangerous decisions anymore.
Okay, now we're going to stop because we're not going to get into a pissing match here. We know, because I know Tim, that Tim screwed up royally when it came to his hedge fund. Tim, are you going to deny that?
No, and why would you think I was ever said I was a successful hedge fund manager?
He was a miserable mess.
I'm just much better as a teacher, and because of my loss, that made me an infinitely better teacher. And Jim, I'm willing to give you a full day teaching. If you ever want to come to New York, I will teach you about this stuff, and then you can learn from the error of your ways, just the way that I have.
Let me ask you something, Tim. In a moment of gesture of kindness, because you're the mad one. Because let's be honest, you're the one that's the prosecutor, and right now in the show, or at least in what it was, Jim was on the defense, right? As a sign of good faith, why don't you send him some of your DVDs?
That's what I want to do.
Good, you're going to do it. I'm going to arrange it. Jim,
DVDs.
Do you want them? Jim, do you want them?
I'll send you two of my DVDs.
I'm going to give a positive note here. Okay.
Okay.
Something that I am in total agreement with Tim on.
Okay.
Because I've read his blog and I've seen some things.
Okay.
Tim, I will agree with you 100% that the SEC does not do their job when it comes to especially the penny stock world of monitoring it. When you might bring up something and they never bother to look at it. I'm going to give you a credit on bringing that up because I like.
But how would you know? You don't
100%
read
agreeing with you.
But how do you know? You don't read SEC filings, so how can you comment on the SEC?
No, what I'm saying is I'm agreeing with you that they're not doing their job.
I know, but how do you know that?
You point that out on your website, and I agree with you 100%.
Okay, listen.
But you admitted you don't read SEC filings, so how do you know what the SEC is doing or they're not doing?
All you do
is read Yahoo Finance and bar charts.
No, he said he did read SEC filings, but he didn't read it this time. Is that correct, Jim?
Okay, that's correct.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to do is agree with Tim when he says that if these two guys are promoting the stock and they've continued to do it over and over again and nothing's happened, the SEC is not doing its job.
I understand. Now we're going to hold hands. I want to hold hands and sing Kumbaya now.
That's very kind of you, Jim. Thank you for agreeing with me. Okay. I appreciate it. I like the fact that you ended on a positive. It's going to make our private day trading class a very good and successful class.
Kumbaya.
That might be very interesting.
Okay. I'm going to get you the address. Jim, I'm going to have him send you some DVDs. We're all happy. We're going to go out for drinks one day, and we're going to laugh about this in the back one time saying, boy, you remember those days. Anyway, thanks for joining us, both of you, and we will have this up and shortly, and both hopefully will appreciate the honesty, and everybody will appreciate the honesty. I think that you guys did a great job Only a couple times did I not referee correctly. I'll take the rap for that. Jim Van Meerten, thank you so much for your help. And Tim Sykes, your help as well and clearing up some of this matter about some of these penny stocks on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Thanks to both of you guys.
Thank you very much,
good job.
Andrew.
Okay, I'm officially exhausted from all that. Thanks for joining me today. We're going to wrap it up right there, and I hope you enjoyed this. Give me your comments on that. We're probably going to leave that kind of discussion for the wayside. We're going to kind of want to clear that up, though, two guys that I know and two guys I want to hear from. Thanks for joining me next week. We have all sorts of good things happening. Boy, the guest list is growing, and I'm going to leave it for a surprise. We have some great guests next week. I think you'll really enjoy them, and as we've had in the past. Thanks for joining me again. Make sure to add Andrew Horowitz on Twitter. We'll see you real soon on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Have a prosperous week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.